Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day vacation fix for Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals. And a Disney-featured stroller vendor. Today on the podcast, we're going to take things in a little bit different direction. We've been talking lately about Walt Disney World quite a bit, but this time we've got a guest who's going to come on the show and talk about an RV road trip through the Midwest. So welcome back to the show, Josh.
Hello.
So last time you were here, we were on the oceans with you.
That we were.
This time, we're going to head to the other side of Walt Disney World, sort of the opposite direction, and talk about an RV trip you took this past fall, 10 days on the road, out of Minneapolis. So why don't we start out with just a little background? How did you come up with this idea that you were going to do this next family vacation as an RV road trip?
Mostly it started out of my wife always wanting to go to the Grand Canyon. That's where, you know, that if there's a place that she's always wanted to go, it's the Grand Canyon. And, our friends that we've, gone on a couple of Disney cruises with were, yeah, that'd be kind of fun. And then we started talking about, you know, the, you know, old American road trip, right? You know, people don't do as many road trips as they used to do. So it sort of evolved from focusing on the Grand Canyon and incorporating, you know, a road trip and what all that involves and how would we go about doing it. So that's kind of where it started from, was
okay.
Seeing that.
So let's make sure we get this piece by piece, because it started out as just this family road trip. But I heard you mm-hmm. talk about the people you were on a cruise with last time. So this was an RV road trip with more than just your own family.
Yeah, in total, there were eight of us in the main RV. And then when we got to Albuquerque, another guy in his pickup trailer RV joined us. So there was, you know, from there, there were actually nine of us total in two RVs, sort of old school caravanning it across the country.
Okay. Now, why don't we get a sense of the overall route first, and then we'll break down the individual pieces. So you planned out a route that originally departed from Minneapolis, and I understand the first leg was a pretty long leg, you know, Minneapolis to Albuquerque.
Yeah, so in Minnesota, we have a period of time, the third weekend of October every year is a Minnesota Educators Conference. So it's sort of a great place to plan vacations around, because you're guaranteed every year at least, you know, 4 days off. So that's sort of where it started from. And I started looking at where could we go inside of that time frame. And the Albuquerque Hot Air Balloon Fiesta was ended sort of a week later than it normally does, apparently. This was our first time there, but it ended a week later. And okay. Our kids were out of school on Wednesday. So I said, well, if we leave Thursday, we could go and get a couple of days of this hot air balloon fiesta. And I brought up my wife and my daughter, and they were all for it. So that's how we ended up in Albuquerque. And so we left Minneapolis on the 12th of October. And my grandmother lives in Topeka, Kansas, which is sort of a good halfway point.
Okay.
So we'd camp out in her driveway overnight and then head the rest of the way, and got in about 11 o'clock midnight on the 13th to slept in a Walmart parking lot.
Okay. So let's talk about this, because that means that you were doing, you know, how many hours of driving a day at the beginning of this RV road trip?
So the first night we left after school, which is at 4 o'clock. So we spent 9 hours in the RV that night, the eight of us, you know, and luckily it was at four. So, you know, by, you know, 6 o'clock we eat dinner, and then, you know, kind of everybody grabs their tablets and finds their beds or where they're going to be sleeping. And luckily it was, you know, pretty quiet, but
sure,
we still with eight people have lots of bathroom breaks and snack breaks and stretch breaks. So we ended up getting into Topeka, which is normally about an 8 hour drive, about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. So a little, you know, closer to 11 hours than eight, but you know, I think it probably is a smart way to do it. You don't want to push it too much on that first day, because frankly, you know, the kids had been in school all day. I admire the fact that you were willing to hit the road with them and spend that much time in the car with them, you know, at the end of a long school day, because I know my kids are stir crazy at that point.
They were, but then we, in order to do what we had to do, like we actually had planned starting this vacation way back almost a year ago to the day right now, just because we knew that, you know, what it was going to take on that kind of a trip, plus the hot air balloon fiesta for RV sites sells out really quickly. So they'd been prepped for a long time of, hey, it's going to be long days in the car. So they were they were troopers about it.
Okay. And so Albuquerque, well, we're going to kind of gloss the, you know, pit stop in Topeka. You headed on to Albuquerque, and the goal there was the balloon festival. So talk a little bit about the balloon festival, because my understanding is that this is perhaps the largest balloon festival in the United States.
It is. And, I think it's one of those things that everybody's seen pictures of, but until you're there and you see 500 balloons going up all at once, I mean, it is one of those sights you will never get over. But the biggest thing is we also had to get up at about 4 o'clock in the morning to head out, because they do what's called morning glow. So a bunch of the balloons, about five or six balloons start inflating and glow in the morning and go up to test the air, right? To see I'm not a meteorologist, or do I think I know jet streams, but they do, you know, to see which way the wind is blowing once they get up above, you know, a little bit higher. And actually at first, once those first balloons got up, it was too calm. They were worried about being able to send the balloons up because there wasn't enough wind.
Oh, wow.
So it was delayed, you know, about a half an hour or so, not too long.
And okay,
you really didn't even notice it that much. But the balloons started to pop up.
And I don't want us to get away from this, you know, this phrase. It's because it's a turn of phrase, but it is kind of important. And that is they talk about this morning glow. And you know, that's a very intentional choice of words, because what we're talking about here are balloons that are hot air powered, which means that, you know, they're literally firing up, right? That's an open flame that they use.
And it's hot. It is. And in Albuquerque, I don't think it's the same way in most balloon festivals, but you can, you know, walk right up to them as they're inflating and feel that heat from those hot air balloons. And it is, you know, the fire from those things is hot, but to be able, the heat and the fire from those, you know, turns them right into really big. What's the word I'm trying to think of?
just like fireballs. I mean,
yeah, but the balloons glow.
Oh, yeah.
Like that you plug in the wall for kids. Why can't I?
Oh, yeah, night lights.
Yes, like literally these huge balloon shaped night lights in, you know, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning in October, so it's dark, you know, but
right.
It is really amazing.
Yeah, it's almost like looking out over, you know, dozens of sunrises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so you get everybody up early in the morning for the morning glow. Cool sight, you know, amazing thing. I have to ask, though, you're not a ballooner, so what do you do after morning glow at the Balloon Fest in Albuquerque, since you're up now at 4 a.m?
I mean, by the time that, you know, the sun rises and all the balloons are up in the air, you know, you're looking at, you know, about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning by the time that most of the balloon festivities are over. And that was part of what we didn't know what you were supposed to do. And apparently it closes down.
Okay.
Until the evening. We had no idea. And, you know, really, from Minnesota, we have all sorts of festivals. I'm like, this is a huge missed opportunity that you're closing down for 6 hours in the afternoon, you know, throw up games or something to keep people here spending money, but they closed down. So,
right. Well, now again, it is, you know, the middle of the desert pretty much. So there may be some method to the madness for closing down for a few hours if you've got people, you know, up that early and up that late, but, I don't know. I mean, was it getting good and hot during the day in you know, late October?
It was nice. It was, you know, I want to say it was in the 80s, you know, so it was really, you know, it was great for us from Minnesota where it was, you know, 60 degrees back home. But it definitely did get hot. Now, I had actually left. We had a VIP RV site, which was right on the edge of the grounds. So we were a 2-minute walk from the entrance of the balloon park, but I had to go back to get the RV from the Walmart parking lot. So I had left and had no idea that everything was shutting down. So they were okay. Just sort of wandering around and not really doing much. And we just went back to the RV and just kind of hung out and, you know, enjoyed all the other RV people, which is if you've never been in an RV or around RV people, it's a whole community that I had no idea existed, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, there's the Disney fan community that's its own entity, and there's this whole other vacationing community and really lifestyle community, right? That is, you know, either always vacations in an RV or literally live their daily lives in an RV.
You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, we actually had, you know, some people coming up saying, hi, we're from over here. Where are you from? We're from over here. You know, we had this one guy come over with some really honey, sweet bourbon. I don't know what it was, but it was like drinking sugar water bourbon. Not my favorite thing. And so, but we tried it. He offered it to us, and I had bought a bottle of Arbig Scotch and gave him that, and that was not for him either. So, but
right,
you know,
right.
Like just everybody sort of coming together, you know, bringing over what you had. And,
he brought over my second favorite. He brought over my second favorite kind of booze, free.
Exactly. So yeah.
So nice. So you get to hang out with the RV community a little bit at your campsite. You got your morning glow. What else was there to do with the balloon festival? I mean, obviously it starts back up in the evening after dark when you can kind of see the glows again. What's going on at that point?
That was the plan. However, the morning there might not have been enough wind. The evening there was too much wind. So the evening glow got canceled. They did have a bunch of the balloons out there and just burning their flames, which was kind of cool for the kids, but nothing to, you know, really nothing like the glowing of the balloons. And then they did do a fireworks show, and the fireworks show in the evening was spectacular. I was not, you know, I was expecting, you know, 5-minute show, given that they do it most every night. And, you know, it's this little balloon festival, but it was, you know, almost 180 degrees around you for the fireworks going off. And it was a really amazing fireworks show for the balloon festival. So we watched the fireworks, and by that time it was getting, since it is the desert, it was getting pretty cold. So we headed on back to the RV and called it a night.
All right. All right. Now, all told, how much time did you spend with the balloon festival? Was this just the one day stop, or did you spend a few days there?
That was the main day. It was actually the last Saturday that they were going to be for that. And then they were supposed to do another mass ascension on Sunday. And again, Sunday morning, it was just too windy for them to take off. So we didn't do that. We ended up spending the day in Old Town Albuquerque, just kind of hanging out in Albuquerque. So we had fun doing that, had some local, ate dinner at some local place and had fun there, and woke up the next morning to get ready to head to the Grand Canyon. And to our surprise, they could still take balloons off in the morning. So the next morning, there wasn't a mass ascension, but about, you know, 30, 40 balloons. And we had no idea they were going to be doing that, ended up taking off. So it was sort of a nice added bonus.
Sure. Well, I guess
that we were going to take off.
If you think about it logically, you know, when you get that many balloons at one time, they can't all leave at once, right? You got to have a little room to maneuver. So when it's time to go, there got to be a few folks who wait until the sky's clear, just like the folks who, you know, wait till the traffic clears before they get on the highway.
Precisely. So yeah, it was nice, you know, way to wake up in the morning that day before we left. So.
Okay. So from Albuquerque, you're going to continue on to the Grand Canyon. Is this a one day stretch again?
Yep. So it's not too bad of a drive from Albuquerque to the Grand Canyon. That drive, we were only looking at about, normal drive about 6 hours. I was planning about 8 hours, and we were well on to making 6 hours, but on the path we drive by the Painted Desert and Petrified Forest. And I mentioned to my wife, hey, you know, we're here, we're on a road trip, should we pull in? We hadn't researched that part of the country, and the 20-minute stop that we thought it was going to be, or maybe an hour, turned into, you know, a 2.5 pit stop through the Painted Desert and Petrified Forest, which we all loved. We would not take it, you know, we would totally do it again in a heartbeat, but it was not the pit stop we had thought it was going
to
be.
Right. So you had an unplanned extra destination along the road trip way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
So talk to us about this a little bit, because, you know, you throw out the term, you know, the Painted Desert, Petrified Forest. So what is it that you actually see? What was worth spending 2.5 hours exploring?
So it's really an ingenious way that they have it set up. So if you're going either direction, whether you're going from Arizona to New Mexico or New Mexico back, they actually sort of have a road that sort of cuts it in between. So you take a detour, but it's continuing on the path that you're already going. And depending on which way you're going, you either hit the Petrified Forest first or the Painted Desert first. And the way that, I'm not going to remember exactly what it is, but the way that the sun hits all the different layers of rock just makes so many colors in the sand and the landscape. And it's just amazing. I mean, so one of them, that's the main area. And there's all sorts of different Native American tribes that have lived there over the years in, you know, and you can see their petroglyphs and their old homes inside the side of these rock walls, you know, and, you know, the different, you know, they still have some of the old dwellings that they lived in. Right, and then you continue continue on and you see this, the petrified wood. And that's what my kids really love. They were fascinated by seeing this stuff that looked like wood. And when you got up to it, looked like rock. Like it was just the, how does this work? You know, it was you know, it's the things that you've heard.
Yeah. It's that cognitive dissonance moment, right? Where your brain, you know, your eyes see something, it's supposed to be wood. And then your brain, you know, finally triggers that it's not, and it doesn't quite match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, just one of those things. And we had purchased, you know, we knew that we were going to be staying when we got to the, finally got to the Grand Canyon, we were going to be staying on in the park. So we had bought a national parks pass to go to all whatever parks we wanted to. And that's partly why we did it. Cause we're like, well, we paid the money for the parks pass. Why don't we, you know, get as much out of it as we can.
Well, now,
and in doing
Well, before we get into it, I mean, that's a good planning tip that we ought to share with folks who are looking at doing a road trip kind of vacation like this, where, you know, you may have a particular national park that's your sort of planned target, but if you're going to be driving near, past, around other parks as well, you know, that there are options when you're planning your park entries to sort of, you know, get some bonus benefits along the way, right?
Yeah, yep, yep. So with that, you know, we got to park for free. Later on in the trip, there was an upset moment of the park's pass. But mostly it was, you know, we have this pass. Why don't we, you know, use it?
And I guess what I was trying to get at is, you know, what was the difference when you went to get the pass? What's the difference between, you know, a more open-ended pass versus just the pass that's good for a specific day or time frame in a particular park?
Yeah, that it really can depend on the park a lot.
Oh, okay.
So I want to say that the Petrified Forest Painted Desert entry per car was around $20 or something like that. In that range, was $20 or something like that.
Right.
You know, then the Grand Canyon was another $20 a day, and we were there for 3 days, you know?
So
by the time that you know, and in addition to all the other places that, you know, you can use it at and all the different, landmarks and sites and, you know, all of the things, it really, the trip, having the pass and doing those things, we really realized how much of United States that we have no idea is really available to us by just using that one little pass, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. And so, you know, you were able to get the pass that was good for multiple parks, and, you know, you probably saved money the minute you pulled into the Grand Canyon, since you'd already stopped it at the Painted Desert.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. That was, and it covered us all, you know. I mean, I think the Grand Canyon, the best part about that was it covered the car, not and versus going in, you would have had to pay per person, you know.
So that was
another, you know, depending on the park. Again, it can, which I think is a little bizarre that it's not always per car or always per person. It depends on the park and the site, and you know.
Right. Right.
Yeah. The other really cool thing that the kids really got into was when we got there, they have a passport system similar to, you know, your passport to go to different countries, but this is just for all the national parks that you can get stamps and stickers and things to put in there over time. And my middle child, really got into it, really thought that was cool, and started planning out where we want to go next for the next trip so that we can get the most stamps at all the national parks. And so that was a, you know, just a cool thing that they've included in all the parks to get, you know, kids and you to see all the places that you can go or have been. And
right. Okay. So that's the park pass thing. So now you're on the road, you're heading towards, Grand Canyon, and you're going to stay in the park there, at the Grand Canyon. So, kind of talk a little bit about that transition, what it was like, how you know, what you found as you pulled in, at the Grand Canyon.
So, because of our detour, we didn't really, you know, get as early start as we wanted. We didn't get to the Grand Canyon until about 9-10 o'clock at night. So it was pretty dark, you know, mostly just pulled in, got the RV all situated, leveled out, got the water and sewer. And the great thing, if anybody's listening that does RV trips and hasn't ever been to the Grand Canyon, the RV site inside the park at the Grand Canyon does have cable hookup as well. So that was nice, given that, you know, we could watch some playoff football while we were there, or some football while we were there too, which was nice. So once we were there, mostly it was just kind of get everything situated, make some dinner, get everybody into their beds and call it a night. Cause we knew, you know, I was planning, you know, to make sure that I was going to get up for the sunrise in the morning. If nobody else was going to go, that's fine. You know,
you were going to make rope drop, right?
I was going to go, you know what I mean? Who knows when we're going to be back in the Grand Canyon and what if it rains the next day and now you've missed your opportunity. So,
sure.
So my wife and I ended up getting up at, you know, about, like I say, about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, so we could head out and
after the balloon festival means you got to sleep in an hour and a half.
Exactly. Except we lost it. Did we lose an hour there that direction? I think we did lose an hour. So we, you know, it was about the same. But when you take in the, but yeah, you know, yeah, it was nice to. But just to see the sunrise on the Grand Canyon, my wife had never been there before. My experience of the Grand Canyon growing up, my grandparents lived in Arizona. It was pull over to the side of the road. Here's the Grand Canyon, kids. Let's get in the car and go home. Like that was, what my trip to the, so my right, wife,
come on kids, hole in the ground.
I'm like, exactly. Yay. You know, so when she wanted to go, I'm like, well, why? You just pull over, you see it, you get back in and you go, you know, and that's how my friend that went with us, he was sort of the same way. Like, really, we're going to spend 3 days at the Grand Canyon? Like one isn't enough. Once you get there, there is so much to do that you have no, you know, like mostly you never think about all the things that there are to do at the Grand Canyon. So.
Well, so let's talk about some of those things. I mean, obviously you get a really impressive sunrise, but you know, then what, right? I mean, it's not like the balloon festival. The Grand Canyon doesn't shut down for the day.
No. So one thing that we didn't do at the Painted Desert, but we found at the Grand Canyon is a junior ranger book. So most of the parks have junior ranger books and it's activities. They get the kids looking at what's going on around them, and depending on the park, right? So the Grand Canyon, there's lots to do. So to get your junior ranger badge is a lot more involved. So that's really what took us up that first day, was just exploring the areas around us in the Grand Canyon and, you know, doing some little hikes here and bigger hikes there and, walking around and seeing all the things that there are in the Grand Canyon that we don't have in Minnesota. You know, it's such a different landscape for them than here. So it really was just, I mean, if you're not a hiker, you're not going to walk a lot. I wouldn't take 3 days for the Grand Canyon, but we are. We like to be outdoors. We like to, you know, hike and walk and get around. And, you know, there's all sorts of free transportation once you're there and inside. And, so that's really what we did. We just sort of took advantage of the free shuttles that go around the Grand Canyon and see all the sites that there are, you know, and get a glimpse of, okay, the next day is when we're going to take on one big thing. So the next day was when myself, my two buddies, and the three older kids took on a hike down into the Grand Canyon. So we did that the second full day we were there was we actually took on all of us heading down into the Grand Canyon, which
okay.
they did great. We made it about with all three of the kids, we made it about 800 feet below the surface of the Grand Canyon, I guess.
Right. Because what you're doing is basically kind of doing switchback hiking down the, for lack of a better way to put it, I mean, it's not really like rappelling, but you're going sort of down the face of the canyon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that took us, about an hour to get that far down, which for the three kids was plenty. They got to say you ask them to this day what their favorite part about that whole trip was. It was going down into the Grand Canyon. That was their favorite part, was being able to, you know, look up and see how far down they had gone. My little one, Parker, who's only six, he didn't go with us on that trip. That one was going to be a little bit longer than we right. thought his little legs could make it. But the other three, you know, they made it like I say, about 800 feet down or so. And then another buddy and I continued on. We made it about a mile down or so. But that trip up, I'm not out of shape. I'm not in the best shape, but it was, it took something to get back out. And by the time that by the time noon rolled around, it was getting hot down in there, and it was, you know, the mid to late October, you know, so it was hot, and I could see, you know, I mean, they're serious when they say don't hike down in one day. It is not.
Yeah. I mean, this is hard. This is hard work hiking. It's not casual, you know, taking a walk. It's a hike. Mm. It's steep and it's rocky and it's, it's work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of work, but so worth it. You know, I mean, it's so worth it to get out there and see, you know, just to about every 20 feet. It's like, how did this happen? Like that little teeny river way down there did that many, many years ago.
Right.
Just really to take the chance to see, you know, how nature can work, you know? And, so that's what we did. We finished that, you know, around noon, I think myself and my other friend made it back to the camp, and then the couple hours we ate lunch and hung out. And then I took my middle child and my youngest child again on another little mini hike down a much easier, lower sloped hike down into the Grand Canyon so that he could say he got to do it too. And then we met up and had some ice cream, which is Waters family tradition. No matter where we go, we're always finding the ice cream shop. So
okay. So how does Grand Canyon ice cream stack up with Walt Disney World ice cream or Disney Mickey Premium Bar ice cream?
Different, you know what I mean? It was fine ice cream. It wasn't, you know, wasn't house made or anything like that. It was, you know, it served its purpose. You know, it served the purpose. But it was another hit, you know. Ice cream is always a hit in our family. So,
yeah. So it's hiking and ice cream. Are there other activities that you're checking out there then while you're in the Grand Canyon, or is it more hiking the next day?
It was just kind of hiking a little bit the next day. And then we did decide to head up to just ease the drive time a little bit. We decided the next day to start heading up to Utah from there. So we definitely saw there were lots of other things that we could have done. But given, you know, by the time that it was all said and done, we were going to be hitting, you know, the higher parts of 4,000 miles on the trip. So we wanted to, you know, kind of get back on the road so we didn't have, didn't get into the next site at, you know, midnight again. So
I get that. All right. So you're heading to Utah next. Now, so far you've done, you know, petrified forest and desert. Now you've done the hole in the ground. So, you know, what's the grand geographic feature that's up next coming in Utah?
So we head to Utah and we go to Dinosaur National Monument, which is one of those places that somebody at church said, hey, if you're anywhere near here, go here. And we were sort of looking for what do we want to do on the way back home that's in between the Grand Canyon and Mount Rushmore. And they mentioned this place and, you know, my son is a 7-year-old boy. So if it's not, you know, superheroes, trucks, the next best thing is a dinosaur. So that's where we go. We go to head up to Vernal, Utah, to Dinosaur National Monument. And it's, there were lots of places that on the drive there, I'm like, oh, I'd love to go there, like Arches National Park and, you know, all these other parks. That
right. I mean, you're in sort of the you know, the hot zone of you know, sort of beautiful view national park land as you go from the Grand Canyon up into where you were headed in Utah.
Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, great views. And you know, I was actually quite surprised that there were, you know, not many hours, but definitely a couple hours where the kids, you know, were sort of looking out the window and looking at the different parts of the country and different things that they don't see in Minnesota. You know, I mean, the first thing I think my son asked about it was, how come there's no trees? You know, like in Minnesota, we have no shortage of them, but right. You know, in the desert, there's not as many. So, but yeah, so we headed up to Dinosaur National Park and saw a bunch, you know, just beautiful parts of the country that you don't get to see, that, you know, and you can't see when you're in the air. So being able to do it the way that we did it was totally worth any pains that arose throughout the trip.
Very nice. And you know, I think it's always great to see on our kids' faces, you know, that sense of wonder when they see something that they really don't have, you know. It's one thing to look at a picture. It's a totally different experience to be there. And it's just as powerful, maybe even more so, to see those, you know, geographic monuments as it is to see, you know, a cruise ship pulling out of port or the castle at the end of Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, and Dinosaur National Monument, you actually, it was fascinating. I was talking to the park ranger about how this park sort of came to be. And when you get up to the viewing house, there's this, a wall of dinosaur bones, you know, huge, huge wall, probably, you know, 75 feet long and 30 feet tall. And it just looks like, you know, when you're at the science museum or a museum and they've got dinosaur bones and it looks like a rock that they sort of put dinosaur bones in. And they're all like that. No, that's how it was found. Like when the first people that came upon that part of the land, this is how it was found. And, so we, you know, they were talking about how it was formed, and how it was formed was there was an ocean, or there was, you know, dinosaurs walking around, and they all died in one area. And then the water came and washed the bones into a particular area. And that's when the Rocky Mountains formed. And when the Rocky Mountains formed, they pushed that piece of rock that the dinosaurs had, you know, died on, up. So instead of a horizontal place where the dinosaur bones are, it turned it into a vertical rock face that they're all on. And they let the kids go up on them and climb around. I mean, I was amazed.
Oh, wow. So they actually get like to touch physically the, you know, the fossil record.
Exact right there. You can go up and touch it and take pictures with it, you know, and I mean, they're huge, you know, femurs, and you know, they're huge bones, but they also have, you know, a baby Triceratops, I think, is in there, and all sorts of, you know, other bones. It's not, you know, it's a good half day. You know, it's one of those places that the main hiking trail was actually closed for repairs. They'd had some, I don't remember if it was rains or snow that had melted or something, but it washed away a bunch of the hiking trail, the main hiking trail. So that had washed away, but so you couldn't go down on that, but it was a great, you know, I mean, great half day. We ended up taking the RV sort of back into another area and seeing some really amazing petroglyphs that they're just barely out of reach to being able to touch them, but there's no ropes. There's no, you got to stay back 100 feet. No, you're right there. You know, which is so different than most of the other places, you know, that you get to go and see those kinds of things. It's always, you know, roped off and under a glass box and really cool stuff.
Yeah, that is cool stuff. That's great. All right, so you've got now, you've done a half day in Utah in the Dinosaur National Park. It's about time here, I guess, to start looping your way back towards Minnesota. The plan, as I understand it, was, you know, fewer stops in the interim, but you did have one sort of landmark destination still in the works, right?
We had one more landmark destination on the way back home. First, though, we did finally, I didn't mention it any other time, we finally got to do s'mores by the campfire. No other place that we were RVing could we do a campfire. But finally, that night, after the Dinosaur National Monument, we did get to do s'mores.
Okay, and that's, I assume, because there were such drought conditions that there were, you know, you couldn't do open flames.
If we had been actual camping in the Grand Canyon, we could have a campfire. But because we're in an RV, that park, you can't. I don't know why.
Interesting.
But we couldn't there. And then where we were staying in Albuquerque just didn't really allow for it, really. It was, you know. But so we did finally get to have some s'mores there in Utah. But yeah, so then the next morning was another get up at the crack of dawn. I think we headed off at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, because we had to, one, we were, it was getting time to get home, you know, 9 days in a Class C RV with 8 people. Was getting, you know, ready to, okay, I'm ready for my own bed. I'm ready for, you know,
yeah, you started to reach maximum density.
Yep, exactly. So we decided, you know, let's power home. But on the way home, you know, since it was on the way, you know, it was 20 minute out of the way to go and see Mount Rushmore, another, you know, one of those places that I've never seen. I had never seen Mount Rushmore. My wife had seen it, but I hadn't, and our friends that we were with, they hadn't seen it. So we, you know, pulled off and saw, you know, got to see Mount Rushmore. My daughter wasn't feeling all that great that day, but, you know, we still got some pictures with, there's some mountain goats or sheep that sort of wander around Mount Rushmore, which I found was kind of funny, seeing these sheep just sort of wandering around,
right.
You know, perfectly fine having people come up to them and feed them and talk to them. And, you know, but so we got some pictures with them and some pictures of Mount Rushmore, but not a whole lot of hiking, just a couple pictures, having some chicken fingers, and then heading back to the RV and putting on a movie. So,
okay. So it was literally a quick stop by the roadside to say, we were here, we saw it, but it's been a long road trip and we're winding down.
Yep. So we did that. And then I have not much, but I have a very, very small amount of Cherokee in me. So I personally wanted to also see Crazy Horse on the way home as well. So another trip, pit stop to go to that monument, though very far from being finished, but it was cool to see that, you know, and it was one of those places that I was about the only person of the eight of us that had any interest in seeing it. And when we got there, the other people that were with was like, they had no idea what it was, what it really meant, what they were trying to do there at that facility. So it was one of those that kind of like the Painted Desert earlier on in the trip, where it was a surprise, you know, stop that we had. It was another surprise stop for most of the people there of what that monument really represents and what they're trying to do there. And it was great to have people see that. And then,
well, so talk a little bit more about that, because I'm not sure that people realize what is going on with that monument and you know, what the point is.
Yeah. So the point really is to just honor, you know, the Native Americans and their sacrifice to our country with, I would butcher the actual story of it, but, really acknowledge those that came before us in this country as well. And they're, you know, they don't have any funding from other places other than what they're trying to do. And really they're trying to, one, build a monument, but also build, you know, a medical center and educational areas. And I mean, they really have a huge plan that's, you know, going very, very slowly, but they're doing it all, you know, grassroots and themselves, and, you know, really trying to create something that future generations can be proud of, that is their own, you know, a Native American thing, you know,
I think it's important to understand that, you know, the whole Mount Rushmore sculpture, you know, it's a national park, and you know, we kind of get excited about, you know, these huge statues of great American presidents, but it was essentially built on sacred Native American land over their objections. You know, and I think that it's interesting that the response now has been, look, you know, that ship may have sailed, but, you know, they're rather than trying to replace that monument, right? What they're saying is, look, we're going to build an actual historical monument, right? Not this made up, you know, cross historical, you know, gigantic stunt sculpture, actual historical sculpture to an actual historical figure who had specific impact in this area. And once that's a tourist destination, then it can actually help generate funds for needed services in this area.
Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, how they have it set up to actually see, you know, a model of the sculpture that they're trying to make. And when you get it, you know, aligned just right, you can see it. And it really is, you know, it's really moving for, you know, what they're out to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you, have made your sort of pit stop at, Mount Rushmore and the Black Hills, you're heading back home. Any incidents or anything else to talk about before the arrival home?
Not especially. There really was, you know, it was, you know, I mean, when you've got eight people in an RV, tensions can run high from time to time, but never anything that, you know, couldn't be cooled down in a 5-minute time up. But so no nothing else.
Good.
Nothing else from the time we, you know, finally make our way back home.
All right. So let's go to our usual sort of end of show wrap up questions, because I'm really intrigued here. The first question we always like to ask is, you know, when you're looking back at the fall 2017 family road trip, you know, 10 years from now, what's going to be that one image that pops into your head that is sort of that signature moment of this trip, that it's just going to be the thing that your brain immediately flashes on when you think of that 2017 road trip?
It's it's really this trip, because of all the different places we went,
right.
is so hard to pick one, you know, I mean, because that the picture of all the balloons and the sunrise over the desert is will be burned in my, you know, brain forever. And, you know, that morning that my wife and I got up before everybody else and saw the sunrise sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon together will be another one of those moments. And I don't think I could say one. I think those would be the two, you know, just the sun, those two sunrises of things that you only can get in those two very specific places in the world, you know? Right. So.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, those are things that you can't really reproduce. So those are the perfect example mm-hmm. of the kind of thing I'm talking about. And then the last question is, you know, somebody else who hears about your trip and says, wow, that sounds really cool. What are, you know, maybe one or two pieces of advice that you would give to somebody who's thinking about this kind of trip and then is, you know, taking pause and say, okay, 8 people in an RV for, you know, 10 days. He left out something. So, you know, what do I need to know if I want to try and pull this off?
You have to know the people that you're going with really well. You know what I mean? It was 2 families. I would totally do the trip again. And I think both families would say we probably would take 2 RVs next time. You know, like it was too many people in too small of a place for too long of a time. You know,
right.
3 days was probably a good amount of time. So that's the first thing I would tell people is, you know, you really want to make sure that have a great plan. You know, there were things, what beds are going to be used by what people, what nights. It would have been a great plan to have had more than halfway through the trip, you know?
Right. Sure.
And then obviously we had a pretty rigorous plan for our trip, but make sure that you've got time in there to make that, pit stop to the place that you weren't planning on going. Like we went to the Painted Desert and the Petrified Forest, or the, you know, drive by Native Americans selling souvenirs, and, you know, make that you really do plan to have time that you can make those pit stops, and, you know, make sure that, you know, the silly little things that you want to do or the kids want to do. My son, the thing he looked forward to the whole time leading up to it was getting a sucker with a scorpion inside. That's all he could talk about the whole time. And he finally got one. It made him so happy. And I to this day can't believe that he ate the whole thing, scorpion and all.
Oh man, we're gonna have to watch that one carefully when he hits tequila age.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, just you know, you'll want to, you know, you do have to be planned. You know, like it's not, you know. Like I say, we started planning for this thing, you know, back last January. So, you know, it took some planning to make sure that we got the sites that we wanted, you know, so.
Well, yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because people sometimes get really frustrated. You know, those national park sites go fast, and unless they've changed, last time I looked at it, they basically let you book those a year in advance. Is that still accurate? Do you know?
I think it still depends on the park and the day. And
okay. I mean, I was like talking I think it's pretty much Grand Canyon, but advance. Yeah.
I want to say, yeah, we were probably a year or 9 months out. Now, luckily, you know, if it's going to be a summer vacation, yeah, you're probably definitely going to be a year in advance. We, like I say, got to, you know, because it was October,
a little bit
slower of a season, you know, we had a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah. And you do, by the way, have to be careful if you push much farther into the fall, because mm-hmm. they do get snow at the Grand Canyon. It gets colder.
Yep.
So, you know, you get much later than late October, and you're going to possibly have to be flexible with your plans because, for example, if you want to go to the North Rim, you may not be able to do that, you know, in November, December.
Yeah, we weren't able to.
Oh, okay. So already by late October, you couldn't do North Rim.
No, no, no. We might have been able to drive over there if we had had a car or something like that, but we couldn't stay there for sure. So,
right.
You know, and when we were driving from the Grand Canyon to Utah, we hit, or no, when we were going from Utah back home, we did hit, you know, they had about 4 inches of snow in Colorado, which,
okay,
you know,
yeah.
4 inches of snow in Colorado, 4 inches of snow is not a big deal for me in Minnesota, but 4 inches of snow in the mountains in an RV is a whole nother bag of tricks, you know, so,
right.
But yeah, you know, you're definitely looking at, you know, it was really nice being in, you know, we looked at being at a little bit nicer sites outside the actual park of the Grand Canyon, but it was so nice being able to literally wake up in the morning and head off to where we, you know, we were a 10 minute walk from the rim of the Grand Canyon. You know, we didn't have to drive anywhere. We didn't have to go anywhere. We debated at the beginning of the trip, did we want to tow a car? Did we not want to tow a car? We ended up bringing bikes instead of a car, which we all decided was the best, you know, way right. better than bringing a car with us. And, but yeah, it takes some planning, especially if you're not, you know, if you're just going to, hey, I'm going to rent an RV once and have fun with it and do it and take some time to get it all, you know, set up the way that you want it. And I was actually really shocked at the number of people that are there renting RVs. We weren't the only one. There's a whole lot of people renting RVs. I'm glad we went with the company that we did. But yeah, there's lots of people doing it. And
right.
I would definitely recommend it, but it takes some, you know.
Well, so you had a good experience. Go ahead and mention the vendor you used, because, you know, frankly, you know, if you had a good experience, then it's worth other people knowing about it.
Yeah, the vendor we used was a little teeny company. Funny story. They're Zinfinity out of Minneapolis. They own, you know, 5 RVs. And when we started looking into it, I just did a Google search for RV companies, and this company came up, and they called me about half hour, 45 minutes later on a Saturday or Sunday night. And she did a quick Google search, or not Google, Facebook search on me. And we happened to have a friend in common. Her cousin is actually my stepmom, and we had no idea. Yeah, you know, she's like, "How do you know Leanne Villela?" So, you know, funny story. But you know, like, it was really, you know, they were on some things a little more expensive, other things a little less expensive. But if we had a problem at 2 o'clock in the morning, a major problem, she would have answered. You know, so there's those nice things about going with the, you know, little small businesses. But yeah, they were, if you're ever in Minnesota looking for an RV, Zinfinity, Zinfinety, I think.
Okay. Well, and I guess the more important lesson from that is that, you know, don't be scared off from a small vendor necessarily. Do your research, but, you know, just because they're small doesn't mean that they're somebody you need to stay away from.
No, not at all. You know, and you know, if we'd walked away, you know, when you get there and you're like, I don't know about this, you know, I mean, in a trip that you're planning out a year out over, you know, anytime I had a question that you know, I think it goes for whoever it is that you're dealing with. If you ever, you know, are dealing with a vendor or somebody and you shoot them a question and they're not getting back to you in a timely manner, there's, you might want to also look for somebody else. If they're not answering your questions, you know, precisely and how you would expect the company, you know, and we never had a question. It was always, oh, here's your answer. Oh, here. Oh, nope. I don't know the answer to that. Let me find out, you know, so.
Right, right.
That.
Excellent. Well, you know, Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about a very different kind of vacation trip. We like to keep it fresh and lively, and every once in a while kind of take things in a little different direction. So thanks again for giving us that opportunity.
Thanks for having me.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment. And there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.